Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and I like to introduce you to people who are making a difference in these unfolding consciousness times in our collective now in 2012. This guy is going to help us all a great deal. Brooks Palmer, welcome to the show and teach us about clutter busting. What exactly does clutter busting mean anyway?
Hello, everybody. Well, what is clutter busting? Clutter is anything in your life that's no longer serving you. So it could be actual tangible, you know, things like clothes and paper and books, or it could be people or, you know, activities and places that we live. I mean, it's anything that's no longer serving us, is no longer nurturing, you know, our lives. And maybe at one time it did, or one time we wished that it would, and we bought it for that reason, or we brought it into our life for that purpose. But it's just, it's no longer taking care of us. And there's something about clutter that creates a chaotic effect in our lives, in people's lives. And so when it goes, people feel better.
Yeah, it's funny. It kind of echoes an inner confusion, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, they both affect each other. You know, if we feel out of sorts, we're not thinking very clearly, so we bring things into our lives that don't really help us. And those things, in turn, make us feel more confused and overwhelmed.
Yeah, so, it's really a scary thing. Now, you know what? How did you get to be a clutter buster-er? Because I see here that you're a comedian.
Yeah, well, this kind of happened, actually. I helped friends with their clutter for a while. You know, I'd help them. I'd come to their house. For instance, here's actually a story that got me started as a career. I went to a friend's house, and I wanted to sit on his couch, but I couldn't because it was filled up with papers, you know, like... like a pizza boxes and junk mail and newspapers. And so I said, can we go through this so I can sit down? And he goes, yeah. So we got out a trash bag and we went through one thing at a time. I said, do you need this or can we let it go? And it turns out everything went, you know.
Oh, wow.
And when we got to the bottom of the couch, the springs of the couch were caved in, you know. They're just, it was an old couch and you couldn't really sit on it anyway. So I said, well, can we get rid of the couch, put it out on the curb? And he goes, really, we can do that, you know? Which showed me how powerful clutter is. It's like, people have a hard time throwing it out, even when it's really obvious it's not helping them. And so I said, yeah, let's put it out on the curb. And we did, and within about a half hour, you know, somebody came by with their truck and picked it up. And fixed it or sold it or who knows. So, you know, friends would just say, God, this is great. You should do this for a living. And I couldn't imagine people paying for it. But then I put up flyers and it happened. You know.
Oh, I'm excited about it. You even have a book out now, don't you? What's it called?
It's called Clutter Busting, Letting Go of What's Holding You Back.
So tell me this, Brooks. Do you feel different when you declutter people's places? Like, does it have a huge vibrational effect on you as well?
Well, I enjoy it a lot. It makes me very happy to do it. There's a very, there's definitely a very powerful energy, like a current, like a cleaning current, you know, that occurs during the clutter bust. And it definitely supports the process. It kind of illuminates, I feel like it illuminates the person's environment for them, you know. So they're able to think and see more clearly. And get out of being overwhelmed, and then they make really good decisions.
Well, I'm an energy counselor, is what I call it. So it sounds to me like that's what you are too. You know what I mean? Is like all those bits and pieces have energy, don't they?
Yeah, they certainly do. And that's why when that stuff goes, they feel better because the chaos of that is gone. You know.
So their whole place can be a tangled, like a really tangled energy mass, and people don't realize that. They think it's just stuff, right?
Yeah, and I understand. It's like when you're caught up in that, it's like a radio jamming signal for your brain. It's like you can't say, "Oh, I'm a bit overwhelmed by all this stuff." Just throw it out, you know, because you can't even say.
So we got you back, Brooks.
Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah, well, welcome again. So tell us what you were saying about people when you move the clutter out. What happens with them?
Well, they get their bearings back. They're like right-sided again. They can think clearly because they're no longer around that that like radio jamming signal, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was interfering with their brain. And it's really important to know that it's not person's like a person. So to realize it's not your fault, because a lot of my clients feel badly. They're like, I should be able to do something about this, and something's wrong with me, and, you know, I'm an idiot or something. You know, people like, can be really down on themselves, but the environment really affects them.
Mm-hmm.
All that clutter, it really interferes with their way of thinking and processing things and their insight and intuition. So that in itself is clutter, how they see the situation, you know.
Have you ever studied the psychological connections? The reason I'm asking that is for myself, having gone through a huge crisis many years ago, and a lot of other people I know, I was unable to sort things. Do you know what I mean? I was unable to not clutter because of an emotional crisis that went on for a long time deep down inside, an overwhelm. And then
yeah.
I've had some friends who are hoarders and or some people that I don't even know very well. There's a lot about that. Is hoarding the same as clutter, do you think?
Well, most people talk about it as something different, but I like to think of it as the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, whether somebody has so much stuff that they can't walk down the hallways of their house, or, you know, their garage is filled up with things and it bothers them every time they pull their car in. It's like, either way, the stuff is bothering the person and it's overwhelming them. And so when I work with people, I never really, really categorize it, but it happens. You know, we get overwhelmed, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, being emotionally overwhelmed, and parts of us shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have our full capacity. And that's why I encourage people to work, you know, small and slowly. You know, pick one small area.
So actually the clutter represents somebody's, like, emotional or psychic or psychological pain, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much. It's kind of like if you have a bump in your arm and it's red,
mm-hmm.
you can tell it's an infection, you know. And so you want to do something about it. It's like, all right, I want to be healthy. What do I need to do? And the same thing with the clutter in a person's home. They can go, you know, I can't think clearly. This is really bothering me. I feel very stuck. And so something's going on inside of me, and I want to take care of it. You know? And sidestepping, this is my fault. I should be able to do this, but I can't. You know, just using that compassion and helping yourself.
Yeah, because I think when you get like that, when I have gotten like that, or other people, you can't even start cleaning out a cupboard without it having a huge emotional drain or frightening aspect to it.
Yeah, that's why I encourage to pick one small area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could set a timer on your watch, or you could have a clock right by you, or a kitchen timer, and just pick one little area. It didn't work like a half hour, you know. But recognizing that you don't have your full wits about you, you know.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually, it's a healing thing, isn't it? I mean, it's actually a healing service that you're offering.
Yeah, you could say that.
Mm-hmm. No, I can see that it is, actually. So tell me, Brooks, did you ever study psychology? You've got a real kind of an empathetic nature. Have you studied all this?
No.
Hmm.
No.
It's just an instinctive or intuitive intelligence you have, eh?
Yeah, for some particular reason, I have insight in this area, and I'm able to help people.
Now, the fellow that you, I really appreciate that. The fellow that you helped who had the three-story condo, did his life become more productive? You know what I mean? Did he feel like freer to produce for himself?
Yeah, he's an artist, so he went back to creating his art, and he started selling it again.
Oh, wow.
So he felt good about himself, you know?
Hmm.
And I think part of him, because he had gotten fired and he was really sad and feeling lousy about himself, I think he brought all that clutter around him to insulate it as a protective measure, you know, like as a defensive thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, eh?
Yeah, and so the thing is, when he was doing it, he wasn't thinking that, you know, I need to protect myself from the world, so I'm going to buy a lot of things and surround myself. It was purely a reactive thing that he did.
Do you think when people are like that, there's a vulnerability underneath the fragility? Do you think they're afraid of letting go of things? Do you think there's a deep fear of letting go of those things that he's comforting himself with?
Yeah. I talk about that in my second book, which is called Clutter Busting Your Life, which comes out in May. Mm. And it's really about how we're very sensitive creatures.
We are, aren't we?
We are, but it's hard for us to admit that because, you know, that means it's admitting that we can be hurt. We can be hurt physically or emotionally. And so sometimes we gather things around us to protect that sensitivity as a defensive measure. And so the thing is, it ends up covering up our sensitivity.
Hmm.
So our real strength is that sensitive nature that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So, but by surrounding ourselves with this false armor, with this stuff is, it dulls us. And so we can never feel safe enough, and we can never feel happy with that armor.
Oh, I think that's interesting. You said it dulls us. That's a really good way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what the stuff does, and we don't realize it. It's like drinking alcohol. It's like we're in a way we're kind of drunk and numb under the influence of this,
mm-hmm.
and because of that, we don't. Again, our capacities are diminished.
Hmm.
So it's as opposed to like, you know, if we're hammering and we hit our thumb, we go, ow, you know, not do that again. But with clutter, it slowly builds up. It's something we don't notice what's happening. And the next thing we know, we're like, you know, inundated with stuff and we've got a problem, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are people able to keep it off? I mean, are they able to change their habit entirely, or does it take more than one round to do that?
That depends on the person, but it's a new habit.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes, you know, it's learning a new habit. And the world doesn't support us. You know, the world encourages us to get more things.
Right. You know? Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's like commercials out there and marketing things that you know, be smarter. Or what's that that phrase that was going around for a while? Becoming a better you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I always thought that was the craziest statement because a better you, that means, well, it's just so, it plays with people's minds because it means you're not good now. There's something wrong with you, so you need to be better.
Mm.
And so we can't help but think that we need stuff to be a better person, to be smarter, to be richer, to be more spiritual, to be whatever it is, but until I get this, I'm not going to be okay. And we're tricked into thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't even question the, you know, what's going on. We just think the problem is I'm not good enough, so I need to be better. Mm-hmm. And these things will make me better, and they never do. It's just they don't. So it's good to see the underworkings of what's really going on.
So you're saying it's like pare down all this stuff and get to the real you, to the essence of your existence, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I work with people, I always consider who they are mm-hmm. as a pretty good person, you know, as they are. So, and they're usually feeling bad about themselves in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
So what I notice is by getting rid of these things that aren't serving them anymore, where I ask them, like, do you still wear this jacket, or, you know, do you enjoy it, or can we let it go? And they go, no, I don't really wear it anymore, and they toss it. As those things start to go, they feel better. They feel stronger naturally, you know. And they're unencumbered, you know. And
so let's talk about cars. Is it so in cars as well?
I'm sorry, cars?
Yeah, people's automobiles.
In what way are you talking about?
That they have clutter in their cars. Do you think that has...
Sure. I've clutter busted the people's cars. I clutter busted of this lady. She had a... I think we took about 3 bags of trash out of her car.
Wow, gosh.
There was a lot of stuff in the trunk. There was stuff in the back seat, underneath the seats, and in the glove compartment, you know. And, you know, I get it. It's like people go to the store. They do a lot of stuff in their car, back and forth. And so they leave stuff in their car, stuff. It's like a second. It's part of their house, in a way, you know. Because they own it, and so things start to collect in their cars, too. And so really, this process can be used anywhere.
Hmm.
Car, or going through your purse or your wallet or your storage locker or your garage or your desk at work. You know, whatever something that you spend time at, you know.
So if you're working with somebody new, like, you know, if you're talking to somebody who's never done clutter busting before, how do you start? Do you talk about how they feel when, I don't know, how would you start?
Well, I go to their house, and they give me a tour,
mm-hmm.
and we walk around the house, and I just kind of sense, like, where's the space that they least want to be in, you know? The area that they're most uncomfortable in. And then I pick one area in that space, and I have trash bags with me, and I start asking questions right away. But I don't get into, how are you feeling too much. It's more like I'll pick something up and I'll ask them, are you using this or can we let it go? You know, it's really like I want them to be very present rather than being overwhelmed. And their mind is looking at everything.
Mm-hmm.
They're seeing that as a problem. I just want to pick up one thing.
So you intuit the place in their house that's the most disquieting for them. That's how you start? That's the kernel of it?
Yeah, the area that they least want to work in, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't say that to them. I just say, well, why don't we start here?
Okay, because you already picked up on that, right?
Yeah, yeah, and mm-hmm. I keep it really low-key.
Hmm.
So I don't want them thinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want them as if they were in a store and they were looking at a product and they go, like, do you want to buy this or not? You know, do you want to spend some of your money on this or not? It's like I want them to feel connected to who they are in that moment, to what their needs are in that moment. And so keep them honest with themselves. And you can do that when you look at one thing at a time.
Hmm.
And sometimes, you know, emotional issues will come up. I can't let that go because so-and-so gave that to me as a present. And what if they come over and they want to see it, you know, and I tell them I let it go and they'll be angry at me. You know, so sometimes there's that.
And what do you say to that?
Well, I say it's your house, so I would recommend only having things in your house that you enjoy.
Hmm.
No. And if you keep something in your house because you're afraid of how someone's going to react if you got rid of it, then it's no longer your house. You know, and you're in pain in your house because you're worried about how someone's going to react.
Hmm.
And that's clutter because it's not serving you. It doesn't serve the other person either, you know. And chances are that no one's ever going to ask. And if they do, you could say, look, I decided I didn't want it anymore, and I gave it away to charity or something. And but it's your space. It's sometimes we forget that. You know, this is our home. Mm-hmm. The rest of the world we have no control over. But if we're in our space, you know, it's either just us or, you know, our partner or a family member, it's still as much reduced. Mm-hmm. We can make decisions, you know. And we don't have to live with things that hurt us, mm-hmm. make us tired or anxious or, you know, nauseous or whatever.
So what do you do with all the stuff? Do you go on to eBay or do you take it to thrift shops or to the garbage or a combination?
Yeah, there's a trash bag. There's a charity bag. And then there's recycling.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that's really it. I don't recommend eBay unless that's something a person already does and they enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I found a lot of people wanted to sell things and they still hung on to them. No. I've been sitting there 6 months and I want to sell it. I just, you know, haven't done it yet. So it sounds like me.
You've been peeking into my house.
Yeah. So again, it comes back to what's your nature. Like, if you like to sell things, great, you know. But if it's still sitting there, the thing is, like, there's all kinds of reasons to hang on to stuff, and they seem really valid in our mind. Your mind's going, yeah, I need this or something, because we're getting something from it, whether we're being insulated from the world or whether we're getting this sense like, well, I'm, you know, the ad said that I'm better if I have this, you know, or whatever. The main thing is when these things go, when these distorters of our peace of mind go, we feel better. We just feel happier. And it really opens the space up for new things to come in our life that support us.
Well, I noticed that you've worked with seniors, and I just thought, that's an interesting subject. Assuming that some of the people you've worked with are quite senior, how does that work? Do you have any stories about that?
About seniors? Yeah, I have this great story. I was working with this guy. He was in his late 80s.
Oh, great. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was an architect, you know, and he's still an architect. He has clients, and so I went to his house, and he was, you know, he walked a little slowly, mm-hmm. and a little bent over, but he had a very sharp mind, and he was, very delightful person. He had a dog who was also really old, and his dog followed behind him. He followed behind him, and the dog was blind, you know, mm-hmm. but the dog waddled behind him. They were really cute, and so he wanted to work in his office. And we went past this one room, and I had a sense like, well, let's check out this room. And he says, all right, well, okay. So we went in there, and it was a study, like a little room you could sit down and read a book in. Mm-hmm. And it had a dark, musty feeling about it, you know. And there were all these boxes in the room. And there was one of those sleeper sofas that wouldn't close all the way. You know, it was kind of sticking out like at a 90-degree angle. I said, well, what's up with that? And he goes, well, I had this guy come in, and he tried to fix it, like, you know, handyman. But he couldn't fix it. So I tried pushing down on it, and nothing happened. So anyway, we started going through the boxes in the room. It turns out his wife had died 10 years before that. They'd been married since they were, like, 17.
Wow.
And so I said, well, let's go through these things. And he goes, all right. So they're all mementos of their life, you know.
Hmm.
And he wasn't looking at them. I mean, they'd just been sitting in boxes for quite a while. So he would go through them and look at them for a little bit and then let it go. Kind of remember, you know, he'd look at it and remember and let it go. And we filled up quite a lot of trash bags. And he kept a very small amount of things, you know, like little stack of photos and mementos that he felt, you know, would be just right for him. And then he said, he goes, you know what? He goes, I think I'd like to get married again, you know?
Aww.
And I just came to him, you know, and I said, well, are you seeing anybody? And he goes, no, I'll just find somebody. And, aww. And then I went over to the couch. Like, I had this sense, I went over to that a fold-out couch, and I pressed on it, and it went right in.
Oh, my.
To close it up, you know? And so it was almost like the room had been haunted, you know, by his ex-wife and his relationship and all the, kind of mourning feeling, you know?
Hmm. Hmm.
Which, you know, I understand. It's like they've been married for a long time. And but he let this stuff go, and he got a renewal on his life, you know?
Wow. Did he marry again?
I don't know. I haven't been in touch with him since about 7 or 8 years ago. And but I love that story because it's like your life, as long as you're alive, your life's this thing to be experienced, you know? And so I think it's worth getting rid of the things that distract you mm-hmm. from things that matter to you now.
And he wouldn't think they were distracting him as much as they probably were representing a whole feeling he had. And he wouldn't know he could clear that away. Because you just said you cleared away the feeling, right? The grief.
Yeah, I've cleared away the feeling. And it's hard to recognize that when you're in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
Living in your space and you just don't see it. Or maybe you sense something's wrong, but you don't know what it is. But it's worth the investigation.
Hmm.
And it's worth the curious look into it. You know, I think that's what it takes. It takes a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder if I actually like this or not, you know.
Hmm. What about young people? Like, who are the clutterers? Are they any particular age group? Is it all ages? Do
all
young
ages.
Young people bother cluttering?
Everybody's got it. No. Everybody's got clutter. I think what happens is people think of clutter as, you know, stacks and stacks of stuff piled on the floor and, you know, that looks messy.
Mm-hmm.
But clutter, clutter could be nicely stacked in bookshelves or in cupboards or in a storage locker, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They can look nice and neat. But if they aren't serving you, I mean, I keep coming back to that. If this isn't part of your life, if you no longer love it, then it's hurting you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not necessarily hurting you physically, like, ow. Mm-hmm. It's like, it distorts your life.
Or it's draining you, or, yeah.
Draining you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can't recognize that when you've been drained for a while. Or you've been just confused for a while. Because we get used to being in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stop noticing, you know. But it's worth taking the look. And I keep encouraging that because there's some energy in the looking,
mm-hmm.
but there isn't energy in the thinking about it. You know, and by energy I mean like an intelligent, motivating force that helps people take action and do make change.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do you recommend, I mean, we've got listeners here, probably of all ages, though. They're probably on the later half of the Middle Ages, mostly. I don't know that for sure, you know. But how do we start, if we were to listen to this show, which I hope we're all doing, how do we start decluttering without being traumatized and so on?
Well, like I said, it's good to start small.
Mm-hmm.
And pick out a one area, you know, like I'm just going to work on this one drawer in my filing cabinet, not all the files, just this one particular drawer, or I'm going to work on this one shelf on my bookshelf, you know, and, you know, on your phone, a lot of times people have a timer where they could set it for a half hour or an hour and have trash bags there and don't answer the phone. While you're working, and go through one and pick up one thing at a time. If we hold it in our hands, you know, if you're working in your closet, your clothes closet, and you take one thing from a hanger, you hold it up and you look at it, and you go, do I still wear this? Do I feel good when I wear this shirt? Would I buy this shirt if I was out shopping today? Would I wear this if I was going out tonight? And you just want to get that sense, you know, get that feeling. Yeah, but if you get this feeling of like, yeah, but I should hang on to this or I don't know. If you're hemming and hawing, chances are it's clutter. Because it helps, like, for everybody out there to just think of one thing that you really love right now. Like for me, I really love my guitar. And I love playing my guitar, and it's a very vibrant, living thing for me, you know. So when we think of one thing we love, and it could be a person, it could be a pet or an activity we do, if we think about it, it's an easy yes. Mm-hmm. Like, do I like this? Yes. And you can use that as a measuring stick, you know, in comparison to something else. Yeah, I don't really need this, but what if I need it, you know? I don't need this, but what if somebody else needs it, you know?
That's what I do all the time.
Yeah.
And I haven't used it up. That's what happens. I haven't really used this up yet. I might need it someday, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're still using it, great. But if you're not using it anymore, it's okay to say, all right, I guess this isn't part of my life, and I can let it go.
But sometimes it's a prosperity consciousness thing, isn't it?
In what way?
Well, if I give this up, I'll never get another one if I need it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that assails a lot of people.
It does, and I think it's worth... I think it comes down to this. If you've got something in your life that you don't care for, and it's just sitting there, and it's taking up space in your home and in your life, then it's hurting you in some way. It really does. It does. It's like... It has an impact, and it diminishes our life in some way. So you may have this protective thing of one, you know, this defensive feeling of like, well, yeah, but what if I won't get another one, or what if this happens, or, you know, yeah, yeah. But you can feel the tension in your body when you're talking about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good feeling, you know, when you think that way. And you can even have a sensitivity like a radar in your body when you're asking these questions. Like, oh, wow, my stomach gets tense when I say that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I think, like, oh, if I let this go, I'll never get another thing. It's like my back hurts, you know. I can feel my head straining. And so those
it's
are...
It's a form of kinesiology, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, the body doesn't lie.
Mm-hmm.
And I can, when I work with clients... And I'll say, do you like this or can we let it go? And they'll go, well, I don't know. I'm like, you know, and they start to make excuses. They look really pale. Their eyes are often glazed.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they like make sounds like groaning sounds like, you know. And they're often hunch over. It's like you can see it. And I point it out to them and they don't even realize it. Hmm. And they go, oh, my God. So.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, but that, you know, we've got these things and they anesthetize us or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we don't notice it. Like if you took a shot of whiskey, and it has its effect, and so it's the same thing with this stuff. It has its effect on us, and we can't see it because of the effect it has. And that's why I talk about being compassionate with yourself while letting go, like to recognize we hang on to stuff for a lot of reasons that we've convinced ourselves are necessary and important. And so it's really getting past those, like taking a look at that and noticing the excuses that we've given ourselves to live this way. And to see, like, because it really helps to notice, to really see what's happening, to see how we react to what we do, and it's very eye-opening.
And it helps to notice what rationalizations you use for having it, right? Like, oh, I can make this into something else, that sort of thing. A lot of us have done that, and I'm wondering if that's left over from... Oh, it's probably childhood depression kind of consciousness, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's where we learn how to go into a trance, was when we're a kid, because kids get overwhelmed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're a kid, you don't have the adult mind. So a lot of things don't make sense. Mm-hmm. The things that adults do are odd because from a kid's mind, it's not a fully developed mind. You don't understand things. But because you're not in charge, because adults are in charge, it's like there's a lot of pressure to just accept what's happening. And so we learn how to go into trances, and trances are a way of getting through being overwhelmed and getting through pain. And so that way of reaction, that trance reaction, that stays with us as an adult. And so,
have you ever worked with children?
Yeah, I have.
So this could be a good way to offset those pending trance habits, right? Or could it?
Well, it depends. You know, I mean, when I work with kids, the parents often in the room, you know, and the parent often wants to dictate the clutter bus.
Mm.
You know? Like, I'll ask the kid, well, do you still play with this or can we let it go? And the kid will go like, oh, I don't play with that now. And the parent will say like, well, that costs a lot of money, you know. Like, hang on to it. Or the kid will say like, yeah, I want this. And then the parent will say like, we'll try to convince them to get rid of it. And it's really, when working with kids, it's good to just let them make their decisions, you know, based on what's serving them.
But it's interesting to me that somebody would call you in to work with a child. Is it because the child wants it, or is it, again, it's probably a mixed answer, hey?
I mean, I worked with this family, the husband and wife. I was working with them, and then they said, well, can you work with our daughter, too? And she was about six. And I said, yeah. And she was in another room, and they go like, they said, all right, you got to go into your room and work with the clutter buster. And she wouldn't do it. She didn't want to, you know. And then they go, well, like, you better get in there, or he's going to get rid of all your stuff, you know.
Oh, my. So you're the villain.
Yeah, I said, don't say that. That's not, you know. So finally, like, she came into the room, and she laid on the bed with her face on her bed, you know, mm-hmm. her hands over her head. And her mom was like, you know, turn around, you know. He's here. We're paying him. You know, and that wasn't helping, you know. She was trying to force her. So I said, well, you know, my girlfriend's son, he's like a few years older than you, but I've worked with him. And, you know, we'll go through his stuff. And we'll just see what he likes playing with and what he doesn't. And then we give the stuff that he doesn't like playing with kids that don't have toys.
Oh, so, that's great.
Yeah, that's something you want to do. And she like turned around and she goes, yeah, all right. And so I kept it really light. You know, it's just like when your friends come over, do you guys play with this or not? And she would say, no, nobody really plays with this anymore. I could see her mom wanting to say something, you know, but I told her not to anymore. And we worked for like about a half hour with her daughter, and then I could tell she was getting bored, so we stopped, you know. But it was good to actually, it was good to for her to have somebody really listen to her, you know, rather than tell her what to do. And I think that's something we can learn for ourselves too, because I think oftentimes we can tell ourselves what to do when we don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do this, or you just have to do this. I don't want to, you know.
Well, you know what I was just thinking is the number of things that we have, at least in my world, the number of things that we have all have other people's opinion or other people's value system to them as well. Hey, this is the fashion. This makes you stronger. This was great grandma's, you know.
Yeah.
There's a whole value. Sometimes I don't think people are allowed to have their own values when it comes to things. Does that make sense?
Well, I just think it's hard to have your own values because you grow up with people telling you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have teachers telling you what's right, and you have your parents telling you their worldview, you know, and which is kind of, you know, when you're a parent, you sort of have to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's, you know, you watch TV and there's just incredible amounts of opinions on television.
Oh my gosh, it's all lobbying.
Yeah.
Marketing.
But I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, everything is.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that's unmarketed. even, you know, all the way from politics to religion to spirituality to style. Mm-hmm. It's all somebody who has an idea about something and they promote it.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is fine. That's how the world works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it helps to really question the things in your life to see what you actually like.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. As you're talking, I'm fascinated by that particular focus in myself and in my own world. How would I part with this when it came to me and it's valuable in the world? I would never have picked it. You know what I mean? There's that kind of conundrum, isn't there?
Yeah, but it's okay to ask, you know? And that's the really powerful thing because, you know, growing up, asking is not always encouraged.
Right.
You know, it's like you're asked stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But to ask, you're asked, like, you know, test questions in school or things about, you know, but as far as your feelings, that's something you're really not asked.
Mm-hmm.
You're growing up. So that's what this whole process is. And not like, oh, how do I feel, like, on a deep level? It's just like, is this making me happy or not?
Mm-hmm.
Do I love it or not? You know, do I enjoy, like, I've had people who sit in meditation for a long time, and I'll ask them if they're enjoying that, and some people will say, like, I don't enjoy my spiritual practice. But they think they're supposed to because a particular, you know, spiritual leader told them something, or their friend said, you got to do this. And so it's like...
to be, yeah, a better person.
Yeah, be a better you, you know.
Uh-huh.
It all comes back to, well, what do you like, you know? And whatever that is, it's learning how to enjoy your life, really. Like, for you to enjoy it rather than, this is how to enjoy life, you know.
Yeah.
You need this, this, and this.
Well, I think in your work, you must launch that in people. You know, there's so many different levels at which this impacts people's lives, right? So you're probably helping even the late 80s fellow, the architect, helping him launch a whole new level of his own appreciation of his life and possibility, right?
Yeah.
Or even the child, maybe launching a new sense of my opinion, my belief in myself. Do you think families do families clutter together, or is that just a subjective term?
Clutter there? How do you mean?
Does all the family often clutter, or is there like one person in the family that clutters, or the parents and the children will?
Some families, everybody's doing it. Some families, some are, some aren't. You know,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, a person. Sometimes they'll have opinions about what the other people are doing. Like, I remember this one woman, I was clutter busting for her in her house, and she had a teenage daughter, and she was like, so, and we were working together, and she said, oh, my teenage daughter, she's like, she never cleans her room, she's just piled everywhere, you know? And she finally got so frustrated, she goes, let's go down and talk to her. She goes, all right, well, I've got this clutter buster here, and I'm paying him, and I want you to work with him, you know? And she goes, I don't want to do it.
Nope.
And she goes, well, you need to do it. And she's like, I don't want to do it, Mom. So the mom got frustrated. I went back to working with the mom in her office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're working, we worked for like a couple hours. It turns out the daughter started working on her own, you know. But she just did it. She started going through her stuff and letting go of some stuff.
Hmm.
So I think it was because the mother was actually doing it, not because the mother suggested to her, but the mother's doing it herself.
Hmm.
So it helps inspire other people that you can never make somebody clutter bust, you know.
I guess you can't really, because it is, as we've said, it's a real tangle of reactions going on in there, eh? And self-empowerment too, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's a messy thing, you know.
It's a very complex thing. I'm quite impressed by it. It's a very strong healing force that you're doing there.
Yeah.
Mind you, I've done a show on improv and its healing nature, too. Do you want to talk a bit about comedy just for me?
Sure, comedy. I love comedy.
Are you...
it's a fun to laugh, you know.
Are you still doing it?
Yeah. I've been doing it for about 20 years.
Great. What are you doing? Stand up or?
Oh, stand up, yeah. Mm-hmm. I did improv a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I personally like standing in front of a group of people and talking in a funny way. Yeah. And my humor tends to be kind of philosophical. And I play harmonica while I'm talking in between, you know. So, but it's fun. I think it feels very much like the clutterbusting work because the humor is very insightful. And it's another way to talk about things to help people see things in a different way, you know.
Well, also, when you make people laugh, they break out of a trance or they break out of a way of holding themselves, don't they? There's a decluttering going on there, too, in a kind of funny way.
Yeah. That's why people like, I think people love to laugh. Like, there was this joke I had written once. It was, once you make love to a porcupine, you'll never do it again. I thought, you know. I thought part that always gets a big laugh. People can relate to doing something. It's like, oh my God. And then they do it again, you know.
And I can't believe I did that.
Yeah. And I'm doing it again and again. And we're weird creatures. And we think we can figure ourselves out, you know, logically. But it's like, it's impossible. Mm-hmm. Right? There's much going on. There's too many levels and layers, and occasionally we get insights, but we can't control our lives as much as we think we can. Otherwise, right. We would have problem-free lives, you know.
Then we wouldn't grow, would we?
Yeah.
Is your life cluttered?
Well, sometimes I have clutter, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I don't always see it. Like, my girlfriend was helping me recently go through clothes in my closet, and I asked her to because I had a sense that there was some stuff in there that was clutter, you know. So we went through it, and she would ask stuff, and she'd say, "What about this?" You know, and I'd be like, "I don't know," you know. I used to like wearing that. I found myself hanging on to something that I recognized I wasn't wearing anymore, but I didn't want to let it go, you know. And it helped to have somebody asking me, you know, so I could hear it out loud. So, you know, we have stuff in our lives that at one point we loved it, but mm-hmm. then we change, you know, because we're constantly changing. We never stay the same. So what was good for us one day won't be on another day.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? Have you done any skits on clutter busting?
No. I haven't done any. I really, sometimes when I talk about clutter, it could be funny, but I don't really include that in the stand-up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I think you should. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I know what you mean, and people have recommended that to me, but for some reason it just doesn't turn into stand-up comedy, you know.
That's funny.
Which is fine. I like having different things to do, you know.
I think that's good to have several approaches to life and making a difference, because that's making a difference. Both cases, you're making a difference.
Yeah, and luckily I like doing these things. Like, I like doing comedy, and I like doing clutter busting.
That's
so, and I get the side benefit of it. It makes people happy. You know? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it gives people a real release into being the next level of themselves or producing from themselves, eh?
Yeah, and taking life less seriously.
Mm.
I think, you know, when we start to get overwhelmed, it's like the mind kicks in. I mean, the mind's an important part of our lives, but when the mind takes over and just dominates, and tries to fix things, then things can kind of get out of whack. And so humor or clutter busting has a way of loosening people up, so their intuitive sense has a chance to come in.
Mm.
Their creative sense has a chance to suggest things and And
I think the combination of the two, Brooks, is really great. Next time you come on, you'll have to do a little skit for us as well. So let's find out your information. The name of the book is?
Oh, there's two books. Clutter Busting, Letting Go of What's Holding You Back, which is available now on Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Clutter Busting Your Life, which is coming out in May of this year.
And Clutter Busting Your Life is about our inner cluster? Clutter? Not
it
cluster.
Goes into how clutter affects our relationships and whether it's the relationship we have with ourselves or with our family members or friends or lover or business, you know. And it really talks about that sensitivity that I was talking before and how we hang on to things as a false armor to protect that sensitivity, but then we lose touch with that essential part of ourselves, you know, with our sensitivity, and then we start to suffer.
Hmm.
And then we get more stuff to try to feel better, and it just feels worse. You know?
Well, sometimes that ownership becomes a kind of a style of self, doesn't it? It's sort of an identity.
Yeah. So, well, it's trying to like kind of adhere another identity on top of our own.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, tell me this. Tell me this, Brooks. Have you ever found like gold underneath piles of clutter or something exciting like that?
Yeah, one time I was working with this artist in North Hollywood, and he was a famous modern artist. He used to live in New York. I didn't know his name because I'm not that familiar with him. And we're going through his garage, and there was all these boxes, and it was piled to the ceiling. And so I'm going through some crate. I opened this crate, and there's a painting. And I look at the painting, you know, and I saw that it was signed Picasso on the painting.
Wow.
And so he was in the other room, and while I was unwrapping some stuff, so I called him out to the room I was working in, and I said, is this a real Picasso? And he was like, oh, yeah. You know, he purchased it in New York a long time ago.
Wow.
And put it in a crate. And it turns out there was two other Picassos.
Oh, my.
Two other crates. And you know, he's just forgotten that he had them because they were buried under all this other stuff. And he also, because he was friends with Andy Warhol in the 60s, there was a drawing by Andy Warhol of the original Campbell's Soup art that Andy Warhol had done, and it was like a drawing of how it was going to look, you know, and it was signed by Andy Warhol.
Wow.
So sometimes people find money. Like, I think the most anyone's ever found was, I think it was about $20,000.
Wow.
In savings bonds, you know, and cash. People often find cash.
It was the fellow who found the Picasso, the art fellow that you found the Picasso for, was he thrilled, or how did he feel?
He was surprised.
Hmm.
But he got on the phone and called Christie's Auction House. And they said, yeah, bring it over, you know.
Hmm.
And but he was very preoccupied with a lot of things. So it was short-lived, you know. And then he actually had rats in his garage. Sometimes we open a box and there'd be a rat in there, you know.
Ew. Dining on Picasso, huh?
There's a lot going on. Luckily, yeah, the rats couldn't get into the wooden crates, but they got into the cardboard ones, you know.
Wow.
That just shows you how much was going on, how much distraction was going on that he wasn't aware of, you know.
Well, I have to say goodbye. Our time is up, but I want people to look at Clutter Busting Your Life and Clutter Busting, Letting Go of What's Holding You Back by Brooks Palmer, and you can get those on Amazon.com. But Clutter Busting Your Life's not done yet, is it? It's still perking.
Oh, it's done. It's written.
Oh, it's written.
Yeah, it's just going. It's at the printers right now.
Oh, it's at the printers. Great. So we can look for that anytime. And you're going to be on the road. You're going to be in Seattle in June. Do you have other places you want to tell people about?
I'll be in Seattle June 8th at East West Bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be up in Vancouver at Banyan Books like the day before. And I'll be down in Portland, I think June 10th or 12th, I can't remember.
And so you got down a cluttered schedule.
Oh, yeah, for about a week I'm going to be on the West Coast.
Yay.
And I'll be in Boulder the week after that, and then New York sometime this summer.
So people can find out where you are in your tour by going into your website?
Yeah, clutterbusting.com, and it'll list it under the events page.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate your coming on to Paradigm Shifters, and you're making a difference. You're certainly making a difference in my consciousness about what to do.
Oh, good.
If you were closer, we'd hire you in.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you having a show like this. It's great that you're helping people.
Thank you so much. Well, like you, I do what I love. You know.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Paradigm Shifters tonight and enjoying Brooks Palmer's presentation on clutter busting and how it can change your life. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, if you have any feedback for me, Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle.com, Veronica@VeronicaEntwistle, no H in Entwistle.com, or if you want a session with me or with Brooks Palmer, you know the address. Good night, everyone. Many blessings.